Talk Live.
What is Free Talk Live? We are a live radio call-in program where you can call 603-283-6160 and talk about whatever's on your mind. That's 603-283-6160. In the studio, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass. Joining me remotely, it's...
Mark Edge, coming to you from Florida.
Wow, hello, Mark. You are... loud and proud, as we like to say.
Terribly sorry.
No, it's okay. I have the ability to adjust things at my fingertips, in case you didn't know that.
I can see it from here.
Oh, you can, actually. And, in fact, those of you who want to see, for some reason, Mark and I both have faces for radio, if you will, you can watch the video over at watch.freetalklive.com. If you so choose. We are expecting Peakless Mountaineer. However, Mark being in Florida is sort of laughing at us all in the Northeast.
Or even, yeah, I hear your weather's really nice right now.
Or even North. And, like, my response to that is the biggest hurdle that freedom-minded people have to overcome is snow. like to make the movement happen, to get people to come to New Hampshire to, like, you know, rally for more freedom, at least in one state out of 50, you know, like for whatever reason. And it's like, I'm telling you, we got dumped on today, like more than a foot of snow. Ooh. And like, yeah, seriously, like overnight, right? And I was up late last night because I was doing things, and like even late last night, 2 a.m, whatever, I looked out, and I'm like, it's just a dusting. It'll be fine, right? I woke up at, 10 or something this morning, and like, well over a foot of snow, right? Now, I own a snowblower, right? And the joke, of course, is what did the snowman say that made him pull, or why did the snowman pull down his pants? It's because he saw the snowblower coming down the driveway.
Indeed.
But, like, my snowblower decided not to work today. Right, I think I gummed up the carburetor. I probably didn't, like, you know, store it appropriately, or it's been too long since I changed the gas. It was kind of a mild snow winter here in New Hampshire for the most part. So anyway, I go to fire it up. It's like, no, screw you, Captain. I'm not going to fire it. So me and my shovel became friends again after some years of being, you know, not acquainted, right? Like... and it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't. I got some exercise. Oh, darn. You know, like around here we have plows and, like, you know, that kind of a thing. Society has decided, albeit government funded, that, like, you know, plows are a thing and they're necessary to keep the wheels of commerce rolling or whatever. Right. So, you know, the plows are rolling. The de-icers are de-icing. And it, like, I in any other place that I've lived, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. In any other place that doesn't regularly have winter that I've lived, i.e. Seattle, Washington, like in Seattle, they freak out, man. If you get like an inch of snow, it's the snowpocalypse. That's their word for every year.
Wasn't snow falling on cedars written about the Seattle area?
I'm not familiar with that publication.
Okay, well, it won some award back 30 years ago.
Okay.
Snow falling on cedars.
I was in Seattle I moved there in 96, so I think it was either that year or the next year, or maybe it was 98, I'm not sure, but one of those early or late 90s years where they had record snowfall. They got like a foot or something like that. And I remember the worst thing that happened out there was there was one of these tandem buses. That's where it's like a regular city bus. That is like has this like accordion kind of thing, and then it's got like another half bus behind it. Like one of them like slid down like a hill, and there's some pretty good video footage of that that keeps getting repeated every time Seattle gets snow. And then the other thing was There are many boat marinas in the Seattle area, and like the marina roofs covering these boats, supposedly protecting them from things like rain and snow, were not strong enough to withstand the record amount of snowfall. And so I remember seeing footage of like these marina roofs collapsing on top of $1 million, $2 million yachts, stuff like that, right? You know, so like people losing their boats basically is what I'm getting at. But that was like the worst of it, right? And like, I grew up in Wisconsin, so I'm not unfamiliar with the snow protocol, right? I'm not unfamiliar with salting the roads, all that kind of stuff. And I get out to Seattle, and everybody's freaking out in the snow. I remember I had to go to a job interview the first year that I moved there, 96, and I drove a front-wheel drive 1985 Chevy Citation up this giant hill by just counter-steering back and forth. It took me, I don't know, it should have taken like a minute to get up this hill. It took me 8 minutes to get up this hill. But like I did it because I know how to drive in snow, and apparently nobody else did. I made it from what's known as West Seattle into downtown Seattle to this office building that, you know, I just assumed would be open. But it was not. But I was the only person to show up. I showed up for my interview. I was early, if not on time, right? If anything, I was, you know, 15 minutes early to this thing. And I walk up to the door and, like, it's locked. There's a sign that's like, due to the snow, we're closed today. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And so the next day, I give a call to this place. It was one of these, we'll call it a temp service, right? It was one of these contracting, you know, type of entities where they like, you know, are looking for people for specific jobs or whatever. And so I call them and I'm like, hey, you know, I was there yesterday at the appointed time. In fact, I was early. You can check your security cameras if you want. And no one else was there. You know, can we reschedule this thing? And they're like, oh, no. We've got you down as a no show. And I'm like, go FCC yourself, right? You know, like, I'm not doing any business with you. Good luck on your future endeavors. And I went and, like, immediately drove over to some other, we'll call it a temp service or an agency, if you will, to find employment in my chosen field. But, yeah, like, they were willing to screw me over. But, like, I was the one who, like, showed up and no one else did.
Yeah, that sounds crazy.
Yeah. So that's how Seattle is. But, like, there are way too many people who claim that they love freedom but are way too afraid of snow. They're like, oh, I would totally come for the freedom in New Hampshire if it wasn't for the snow. And it's like, well, then you have a misplaced sense of I don't even know, like freedom or duty or like what you're willing to, like, if you're not willing to sacrifice, you know, one season out of the year for the prospect of more freedom in your lifetime inside of this, you know, organization known as the United States of America because of snow, then I question whether or not you're really freedom oriented in the first place.
Well, this is what I would say about that is that I think that New Hampshire's right for a certain type of person, the kind of person who wants to, you know, fight for more liberty to save America kind of idea.
Okay.
And that New Hampshire is going to have to get used to, and it doesn't want to do this. The activists in New Hampshire are probably more patriotic than those kooks in Texas.
Okay, I'll give you that.
The people in Texas just love Texas, but the activists in New Hampshire, there's just nothing else. They're like, I hate driving in Massachusetts at all. You know, like they just hate being there. I spent quite a bit of time in the last couple of months in Honduras and saw Prospera. Yeah. You can see the website at prospera.hn and Morazan, and the website is morazan.city.
Yep.
I wouldn't recommend Morazan City to any American. You would have to be a kook for liberty to go there, but I think it's worth a tour if you're into that sort of thing.
Sure.
It is a city that is designed for factory workers that make, your underclothes right there in Honduras. And rent is like $150 per month.
Sweet.
It's very cheap. However, it is it, it's a libertarian community, essentially, but it's not made for folks from the United States, to my
Okay.
mind. I don't think there's any reason not to go, but I wouldn't go gallivanting around Chiloma. Morazan City is inside Chiloma, Honduras.
We all
I
know
wouldn't
you're a
go,
gallivanter, so, you know.
yeah, I would not gallivant around Honduras or Chiloma, Honduras at night. But on the island of Roatan is another ZA. This is a special economic zone that you could live in.
Says,
And
all right.
what is that?
Somebody asked us, I think a week ago. They're like, "Do you know what a SEZ is?" And I'm like, "A special economic zone?" And they're like, "Yeah, how'd you know that?" And I'm like, "Mark Edge."
Right. So you go to the special in this special economic zone, Prospera. It is designed for Westerners, and has this beautiful condominium they're putting up. Somewhere around May, maybe 1st of June, they expect to open up this condominium. I've recently been in a finished unit, or at least largely finished unit. If I walked into this unit, I would say I can live here now. I don't know if the power was turned on, but I was in the unit during the daytime. It looked finished. Not all the units are, but you could. Pretty soon, you'll be able to live there. At which point, New Hampshire loses its designation as sort of the freest place in the world that Westerners want to live,
Yeah, I mean,
and Prospera gets that.
I'm probably being semantic or something here, but like I've never thought of New Hampshire as the freest place in the world. I've
Good.
just thought of it as a place where freedom-oriented individuals are getting together to discuss what to do about freedom, like how do we increase freedom? And like there's been like you as one of the co-founders of Free Talk Live, you and Ian Freeman haven't necessarily seen eye to eye on New Hampshire versus other places or whatever. Whereas I think the right approach, at least for me anyway, is that there's room for both. And by even both, I mean all. Like when I didn't have a chance to go to Liberty Forum because, well, I was doing Free Talk Live. I know you were there. I know Bonnie went. I know Gardner Goldsmith, our Friday night guy, was there. I don't know if any of the other folks were there, if Ernie was there or whatever. But like, whether it's Liberty Forum or Pork Fest, like these are the incubators of future freedom, in my opinion. This is where people get together who love and enjoy freedom individually or with their businesses or both, you know, whatever it is. They have philosophies that surround liberty. They get together and discuss things or like catch up and like, hey, how are you doing over here? Oh, you're doing this over there? Oh yeah, okay, that's great. You know, oh yeah, we're doing this thing over here and here's our new thing and like here's a business card, whatever it is. It's a networking event as far as I'm concerned, both Liberty Forum and Pork Fest, and even Fork Fest for that matter, which precedes the Porcupine Freedom Festival. Like to me, there's room for all explorations of freedom. And so in my heart, you know, I love the fact that Ian Freeman is so adamant about, no, New Hampshire is where it's at. This is where the Free State Project is. This is where, you know, we've gotten, you know, thousands of people to move already. And this is where the nucleus of the freedom movement is going to be. And also there's Mark Edge now who, you know, was part of that. And like now you've gone, as I say, gallivanting around planet Earth trying to find other places that perhaps are more free on an individual basis than New Hampshire. And like in my mind, there's room for all of this. There's room for what New Hampshire's doing. There's room for what Mark Edge is doing. There's room for what's the name of the place? Oh man.
Prospera?
Prospera. No. I'm thinking of overseas, a little piece of land they took over and it's
Oh, Liberland.
Liberland. Yeah, there's room for that. There's room for all of these things, all of these ideas. In fact, like the idea of freedom should be spread out and it should be global. There should be other people, other organizations getting themselves involved wherever they are, wherever they want to call home in the you know, forwarding of freedom, the advancement of liberty. Like all of these people, like what's the guy, James Corbett, right? He lives in Japan, but he's one of the biggest freedom proponents that I've ever like listened to, you know? So like, yep. Like in my mind, there is room for everybody as long as you are on the quest for more human freedom.
And I largely agree with what you say. I think that New Hampshire's best for people who, A, are a little concerned about moving out of the United States. Now, I've got to say, I don't entirely understand, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only giving my advice here. You know, the United States has its sort of feel to it. It's becoming more and more homogenized, sadly.
Yeah.
I prefer it. I prefer the idea that, you know, the Northeast is different than the Southeast and, you know, those sorts of things. But whatever the case may be, I think that Prospera would be more for people who want to live free. And New Hampshire's more for people who want to save America. And
interesting.
You know, New Hampshire, you're going to have to fight. As soon as Prospera has that first open condominium, which should be June, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess. New Hampshire will no longer be the sort of freest place you can move to and live as a Westerner. And in which case, then New Hampshire's going to have to fight for every little bit more of freedom that it can get. And I think that's a good thing.
Oh, my gosh. Competition in a marketplace? Are you kidding me? Like, of course it's a good thing.
Yep, it's a great thing. So essentially, that's what the idea is. And I think that a lot of people don't understand that freedom is boring. That a lot of people want to be upset about politics and, you know, those sorts of things. And if that's what you want, then, you know, you can, as a libertarian, New Hampshire gives you something to do. You know, you
want to argue with people? Yeah, come to New Hampshire.
It gives us something to talk about on Free Talk Live.
that's hilarious and true. Like, I'm not saying it's not true, but like the reason it's hilarious is because there's, you know, an element of truth, of course, to what you're saying. And so, like, I mean, to be honest, and I've told other co-hosts and you know, friends that I've made since I've moved to New Hampshire in, has it been 5 years? 2019?
Yeah. Seems like it might be. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Half a decade ago that, like, New Hampshire wasn't the only place that I considered moving to when I considered moving, but it was just a place that, like, Free Talk Live was here, the Free State Project was here, there was a large libertarian community here already, and I thought to myself, if I move to one of these other places, right, Mexico or Chile or, you know, I had a list of places, right, 5-6 places on my list. Like, if I go to one of these other places first, I'm going to regret not coming to New Hampshire first. And so I came here. And, well, next thing you know, I'm on this show and 5 years go by.
Yeah. Right. You own some property. That's just how it goes.
Yeah, like, you know, and like, I'm in a, I don't know, like, amongst the Liberty people, I feel like, even like everybody in the Liberty community in New Hampshire is a unique individual. One of the things I love about the people that I've met is that, like, man, these people are unique and quirky and have, you know, individual things about them that make them different from other people. And like the variety of personalities and, you know, even philosophies are just so vast that I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the real melting pot, or at least as far as I'm concerned, right? America, when I was going to school, right, was like, oh, we're the melting pot of society, as I grew up in, like, basically a white suburban neighborhood, right? You know, and I'm like, well, I don't really see much of a melting pot around me, you know? But as I traveled and got to know the United States better, I was like, oh yeah, there really is, like, vast differences in cultures and in all that kind of thing, depending on where you go. And so, like, I get here and I'm like, oh, it's even more stark. That contrast is just beyond anything I've ever experienced in my life. And so that's what I love about having come here and been here for 5 years now, is that I have met so many unique individuals that, like, I mean, I'm into things that they don't know about, but they're into things that I don't know about. And so we all have so much to learn from each other regarding our own lives, our own experiences, and that kind of a thing, and how we got to the philosophies of freedom. That's the part that I'm enjoying the most about being here. And that includes you, Mark, by the way.
Thank you. Well, I think that New Hampshire is great. I have been a resident of New Hampshire, sort of again. I went to Saipan for, I don't know how to describe it, but for one tax year, essentially. And it was really a 2-month stay, but COVID happened and that kind of affected, the tax situation. So I filed my taxes there.
Weren't you unable to leave because of COVID or something? They were like locked down somehow or whatever?
So the reason that I left was because the governor at the time was looking to lock down the entire island and stop flights on and off. And that sounded like Alcatraz to me.
Mark's like, so I got to get some flotation devices. I got to start spooning out this concrete wall over here.
I didn't leave the island, basically, for 2 months. But as soon as the guy talks about stopping flights, I'm on the next thing smoking out of there.
Right.
And I left on the third to last flight off of the island. And I think flights were suspended for somewhere around 2 months. Not so bad. And then when they returned for like a year and a half, you had to spend your time in a hotel, spend a week in a hotel room, essentially in quarantine.
Yeah.
And I didn't consider that very desirable either.
Right.
And I just kind of lost my desire to return to the island. I had other projects that came up and, you know, that was that. So,
I mean, you did a pretty good job about bragging about that particular area and how
I think it's pretty cool.
And how you thought it was, you know, the freest area outside
in the United States.
In the United States.
No, I think it's freer than New Hampshire. And I think I can make a good argument for that. It's got libertarians care about certain things, right? So it's got legalized gambling. weed doesn't, it's got legal weed. The prostitution's ignored. No sales tax, no property tax. There's a 80% discount on income tax. Yeah, it's pretty free.
Yeah.
But flights there are not cheap.
Coming up, I do want to talk about how in the United States of America, you could lose your $400,000 home over a $1,600 tax bill.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction. And its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
The telephone number, if you would like to join us on tonight's program, is 603-283-6160. If you feel like drinking a beverage, that's because Mark Edge has just taken a sip of whatever tastiness he's... I can't tell what that is. The screen's too small for me.
It's a LaCroix.
LaCroix?
Yeah, you don't know because you don't buy it.
No, LaCroix is actually super popular out on the West Coast. And so is Bubbly, B-U-B-L-Y.
Yep.
This is these seltzer waters that, I'm not paid to say this, but, I have been indulging in something called, Delta, I believe Delta Bevs or DeltaBeverages.com. This is Delta 9 hemp-derived seltzer, right? So it's just like the LaCroix, but it's got weed in it, man, right? So it and they like put some stevia in it to like give it some sugary
flavor. Make it tolerable?
Yeah, well, no, I actually liked it better without the stevia.
Okay.
But it's got weed, so I'm just drinking it anyway, right? And you can get them shipped to, I think, almost every state. I think there might be two, so I think they ship to 48 states. And so I've been enjoying that instead of something like LaCroix or Bubbly. I still enjoy those, but what I've found, Mark, there's a brand called Liquid Death.
Yeah, of water, right?
So they make, the white cans are just regular water, but the black cans are sparkling water.
Okay.
So just like what you're drinking there, but without any of the artificial or natural flavorings, depending on how you want to look at it. What I like about the black cans is that it's carbonated, very much carbonated. And the reason I have always loved carbonated beverages, whether it's soda pop or beer, is because it gives good belch. I love belching. Like, I know this sounds weird, but like I enjoy a good belch. Me and my one of my brothers growing up, and I say one of my because I had several sets of parents and foster parents and all that kind of stuff, we would have belching contests, right? And so this particular brother that I'm thinking of would drink Mountain Dew in order to like have the contest.
Really?
But I would drink Coca-Cola products, whatever it was, didn't matter, because Coca-Cola, far more carbonated their beverages.
Really?
Yeah, like that was the big difference in like the taste test, right? The Pepsi challenge, the Coke challenge, right? Whatever those taste tests were back in the 80s, was all about the carbonation. And so I would win the contest based on the fact that there was more bubbles in the carbonation. And if I chugged the same amount of liquid per volume, I would get a longer and more pronounced belch than my brother would. So, yeah.
You just couldn't learn, could he?
Well, yeah, he was stuck. He was drinking like the Mountain Dew
and
Pepsi.
And I had to drink the Mountain Dew.
But I'm drinking like the Mellow Yellow and the Coca-Cola. So, anyway. Before we go on, Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? Hell yeah. You can live your life on Dash with bitrefill.com, where you can buy gift cards from big retailers, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Thanks to the Dash Dow for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and easy to use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org. All right, so before we went to break, I talked about how you could lose your $400,000 home over a $1,600 tax bill. And that sounds weird to most people because they're like, you know, maybe my home is only worth $300,000. How does one go about losing your house over $1,600?
Sounds like sounds like they should be sending some letters or something. You can't take somebody's house over $1,600, right?
Oh, but they can. And by they, I mean the government, of course. Despite a 2022 Supreme Court ruling, people are losing their property over tax bills that amount to a fraction of their home value and the built-up equity. Mark, are you in a place where you have a door to close or something? I hear background noise that,
okay.
You know, I'm not sure what's going on there. This from, where is it from? The Epoch Times, E-P-O-C-H, Epoch. Tucson, Arizona. Horses are taught Christine Searle. I'm sorry. Horses taught Christine Searle the importance of being fair, intelligent, and innately honest creatures. Horses apparently know deceit when they see it, and Christine wishes they could teach that principle to the state of Arizona. The 70-year-old horse trainer and Arizona native is on the verge of losing her life savings over an unpaid $1,607.68 property tax bill. Quote, I owed them money, and that's what they should get, the money I owe them, Ms. Searle told the Epoch Times. I don't think they should have the right to take all of it. And, Mark, clearly you agree. I agree. Most of our listeners are thinking to themselves, what the heck? $1,600 and they're going to take her house? Arizona is one of the almost dozen states that allow creditors to keep all the proceeds from sales of homes foreclosed due to unpaid taxes, known as tax lien sales, according to the Pacific Legal Foundation.
Yeah, that's crazy. If you owe $1,600 and they sell your house at an auction. Now, first off, I wouldn't sell my house at an auction because I don't feel like I get the right price. But
right.
Nonetheless.
Let's just say you get fair market price.
If they force this situation, right, like you owe the tax bill, it's been like 10 years or something, and you're like the only way they're going to get their money is by selling the house, and they finally take it to auction. Then they keep all the money from the auction,
right,
and you only owed $1,600, whatever that amount is. Say it's $100,000 more, could be more, could be less. It really depends on where it is. That's just robbery.
I mean, like, libertarians, of course, are very familiar with the phrase taxation is theft. This is theft of a whole different degree.
Yep.
This goes back to I remember watching, I think it was Aaron Russo doing a feature film about I think it was called Freedom to Fascism in the, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s, something like that.
Oh, I think that movie was premiered in the early aughts.
Okay, well, whatever. I remember watching it only because, like, Aaron Russo isn't the most svelte man, or wasn't.
Oh, no, he's not.
At the time. But yet he was wearing, like, a skin-tight, like, Elvis-looking suit for this movie. And so it makes it, like the presentation is, the content is awesome. But, like, you're looking at it, you're like, why is this, like, obviously, like, middle-aged, overweight guy wearing a skin-tight suit on television? And, like, we still have no answer for that.
2006.
Okay, very well. Released.
I just remember where I saw it. So,
a 2022 U.S. Supreme Court case out of Minnesota that we talked about here on Free Talk Live previously offers some hope to property owners in these specific situations. We're talking about things like, what do they call it, civil asset forfeiture, right, is generally the terminology used for when government takes your land, right? But if only a similar case is brought in their state concerning Minnesota. In the 2022 case, the justices ruled that Minnesota's practice of keeping all of the proceeds of a tax sale constitutes an illegal seizure of property. This makes sense to most people, right? Like, oh, I've got a $400,000 house. Oh, you know, there's some taxes that haven't been paid, $1,600 in this case. You know, what must I do to resolve this? Oh, if I pay the $1,600, we're good, right? No, not according to many other state laws.
Right. This should absolutely be outlawed. I don't care if it's at the, I'm no lawyer. I'm no Supreme Court justice. I don't know which organization, whether it's the feds or each individual state, should do it, but this is outright insane to let a municipality benefit by selling a house for an unpaid tax bill.
For a minute unpaid tax bill. Right.
Right? Well, like, what if it was $1?
Right.
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 So all they're going to do is it does is incentivize them to find the people out of power. Make sure that they don't pay a tax bill. You know, whoops, looks like there's a clerical error here and you didn't pay a dollar. And it's now gone past the 3 or 5 years, whatever it is.
Right.
The line is, and now we get to sell your house. Come on, people. Like, I don't know what this is, but this is crap.
Under their current laws, 10 states and the District of Columbia have zero means of returning the excess proceeds of a home sale, what Mountain State's Legal Foundation lawyers representing Mrs. Searle call home equity theft. The states include Alabama, Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, and South Dakota. Miss Searle hopes that her case will be the one to set things right in Arizona. So this is happening in, one-fifth of the states in the United States of America, where if you owe some quantity of if the government says, pay us some money or get off your land or else, right? Like, if it's a minute amount, like in this case, $1,600, they don't care. They don't care about you. They don't care about your family. They don't care about how much you've spent to get the property, to acquire the loan, how much time and effort you've put in to, like, work your job or otherwise derive income to pay the mortgage to afford this home. They don't care about any of that. You owe $1,600. We're taking your house. We're putting it up for sale. And we're keeping the rest of the proceeds. By the way, Peakless Mountaineer has joined us. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Hey, all right. I pressed the right button. Sweet.
Especially good to be not on the side of the road.
We did a whole, half of a segment on the Nor'easter. And
it is an absolute FCCing nightmare. When I approached Keene, it having gotten worse and worse and worse, I started actively contemplating, how bad could it physically be possible for the weather to be when I got there? It's like, if they managed to have access to, say, a newly untapped oil reservoir that lightning then lit on fire. I mean, we're still not Sharknado territory, but that's kind of the sort of weather I was expecting once I got here.
Yeah. The good news is it's all supposed to be done by the time the show's over.
Ah.
So, if you consider that good.
I kind of feel like I got all of my winter driving in just this this drive.
For those of you in the north and the northeast, welcome to what we call second winter. So, we had fake spring just like a week ago, and it was nice, right? The sun was out. It was 55, 60 degrees for a couple of 2-3 days or something like that. And everybody's like, oh, spring's here. I better start planting my garden. And I'm like, no. This is fake spring. We've had this before. And, second winter's coming. And here it is.
This is literally why they ask the groundhog if there's a shadow. Is the weather good? Oh, it's good. Oh, that sucks. Because that means that this winter's going to be awful.
Yeah.
And longer.
Just to bring you, Peakless, up to speed, we're talking about this bit from the Epoch Times, or Epoch Times. You could lose a $400,000 home over a $1,600 tax bill. There's a lady, Miss Searle, out of Arizona, who is apparently losing her $400,000 home because of an unpaid $1,607.68 tax bill.
Naturally. They don't want you to own property.
Naturally.
Well, you actually
don't own property, right? If you look at it in the proper financial context, I own some property here in New Hampshire. Mark and I were talking about how I've been here for, 5 years now. When did that happen? Apparently 5 years ago. But even if I pay off my mortgage, I still have to pay rent to the state.
Right.
In the form of tax, right?
Yeah, you didn't really own your property. You just switched landlords.
Well, they've always kind of been the sub-landlord, right?
Right.
In the background.
Your landlord wasn't the landlord. He was just your landlord. And now your landlord is the state itself.
Right. And so if I pay off the mortgage and now I am responsible for paying the quote-unquote tax bill, in New Hampshire they send you this twice a year.
I call it rent.
I call it theft, but, whatever. Extortion, whatever you want to call it.
You got to be careful with this stuff, Peakless, because if you call taxes, property taxes, rent, then you realize the government owns all the property. And if the government owns all the property, then taxation isn't theft because you're a renter and you agreed to it.
So there's owning de facto.
Show me the lease,
and there's owning de jure. So there's rightful owners and there's effective owners. They are the effective owners.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They have no right to anything that
they're not rightful, but
claim.
They are
the effective owners.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so you will pay, I mean, you could pay your rent to only rightful owners, and then the effective owners will put you in jail.
They will.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not just rent, you know, just not in the sense of only, but in the sense of justice. It's not a just rent. It's not a moral or voluntary rent.
That's the point. The point is that it's not voluntary. Can you point to a place or a piece of paper or an agreement, even verbal, like is there a recording of me getting together with some New Hampshire representative going, hey, yeah, you're going to buy this piece of property and you agree to pay us rent even after you've paid off your mortgage?
No.
That doesn't exist. No. I've looked through my paperwork, and that particular item does not exist.
That's not written in English. It's written in legalese, and I don't think any of us speaks that.
Okay, all right.
So here's the essential problem, though. So most people, including most libertarians and even most voluntarists, believe that property rights come down to your ability to defend that property.
Sure.
And if that is the case, then the rightful owners of that property are the state, because they are capable of defending it. You are not.
That's the might makes right philosophy,
it
right?
It sure is, Mark. It sure is, and it is what most people believe. And if that's the case, then they have every right to tax you. If, on the other hand, property comes not from the ability to force that on others, which is fundamentally what defense is, is the ability to force this set of rules on others and them not force any set of rules on you. Now, if it comes not from that, but from I mixed my labor with nature at some point, and other people mixed their labor with nature at some point, and then we traded and gifted until we reached this point where this is the rightful owner of this, that, and the other, well, then they have no right to tax. No government has any right to tax anyone.
You're getting into some very interesting philosophical discussions about property. Like, on one hand, from a person who had never owned property, and by owned, I mean, like, I don't even own the property that I have because I got to pay rent to the state, so whatever. But, like, as a person who had never even delved into this construct that we have here in the United States known as property ownership, right? That's the term it's given in legalese until recently, until I moved here. I sort of always bought into the philosophy of the Native Americans, which is no one owns planet Earth, right? You cannot own physically a plot of land that is 1 acre or 5 acres or whatever. You can live on a piece of property that is that large, and you can farm a piece of property that is, you know, large or larger than that, or you can defend a piece of property.
Well,
that's
now hold
that
on,
large.
Though.
But like,
now,
but like,
if you farm that property, though, you own those crops, right?
Correct.
Okay, so then someone can't come along and be like, "I'm going to take the dirt from these crops."
Correct.
Right.
In the same way that, like, if I'm a Native American and I found like a tree, or like they used to do this for real, they would find a small seedling tree and they would bend it in a certain way and tie it so that it grew in a bent way. And then when it reached maturity, they would chop it down and make a bow out of that for their bow and arrow. Right. So this actually happened. Now, that's mixing your labor with nature to create an item that, like, I don't think anyone on planet Earth would be like, "No, Captain, if you did all that work, that's not yours." Right.
Indeed.
Everyone on planet Earth would be like, "Oh, wow, you went to great lengths to accomplish this."
Well, I wouldn't go with everyone on planet Earth. I wouldn't even go with the majority, because they would ask the question, whose land was that on?
Fair question.
And ultimately, what they are fundamentally asking is which state entity gave who permission to use that spot of land.
Right. And so the unrecognition of state entities being able to, or even individuals for that matter, anyone, doesn't matter what you call yourself or your organization, right? I bought into the fact that, like, no humans, no organization of humans, no organization of animals actually owns planet Earth. Planet Earth owns us. right? If you want to look at it in an ownership capacity, right? Planet Earth owns us. When Planet Earth is tired of human beings, watch out. We're done, right? When Planet Earth is like, you guys have gone too far, you're done. Planet Earth will take us out in seconds, far easier than any tyrant would have ever thought it could be done, right? So, like, in that respect, I kind of... I don't know what the right word is. I don't want to say sympathize, but I kind of respect the philosophy of the Native Americans where they're like, it's like planet Earth is not a thing that you can
own.
And
I still think you're falling into that sense of property where it's who has the power. And it's not a question of does the Earth have the power to eliminate humans? It is a question, did the Earth put in labor to make us? Did we get cultivated by our environment? And I would say yes. So in that sense, you know, if we were to establish that the Earth itself had agency, then I would say, yeah, we are the Earth's property. Because if it has agency, then this clearly doesn't look like a mistake to me. This doesn't look like an accident. This looks like it was intentional and very, very well thought out.
I think humans exist on planet Earth intentionally, right? As a result of nature going, what should we do next, right? Evolution, if you will, in my opinion, is nature going, how do we make Earth better?
Yeah.
Right?
And now, and essentially that's putting things in the right structure. Like, we do not own the unstructured universe.
Right.
We, if anything, belong to the universe.
Right.
If anything.
Right.
Now, if, on the other hand, you own your body, then you have to own the effects.
Right.
Now, if those effects are terrible, you have to pay for that.
Right.
And if those effects are great, you get to benefit from that.
And the universe owning us isn't mutually exclusive to us owning ourselves.
Mm.
It's entirely possible for both things to exist simultaneously. Right? Like, I can own myself. Of course I own myself. Who else is going to own me?
Well, the United States federal government, of course.
Well, and, you know, your slave master and, you know, that kind of thing, if depending on your circumstance.
Well, no, that is the fundamental and simple question. Does your body belong to you or society? And unfortunately, most people at this point believe that it is society.
Yes, they do.
Yeah,
they absolutely do. And what I would say is that as long as you can leave those people's grasp, then you're not their slave, but they'll sure treat you like they are so long as you're within their grasp.
That's a fact. And the worst form of it is when you enforce it on yourself. As long as we think in those terms, in those ways of who can force who to do what, then they will emerge the victor.
Think about this for a second. Is society generally considers male lives to be disposable compared to female lives? Yeah, where did we get that
nature
from?
Oh, nature. And I'd be happy to talk about it on the other side.
We've got more to talk about coming up, plus more about this lady in Arizona about to lose her $400,000 house for a $1,600 tax bill. And will Julian Assange go free? We'll talk about all that coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
Yes, welcome back. Thank you for tuning in. And tonight's program is on the way. And I want to tell you that Free Talk Live is brought to you by Fork Fest, which is happening June 13th through 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire.
Sure are.
It is really beautiful out there. I can't even remember. Like, I don't remember not having a good wake up at Rogers Campground.
Oh, it's
like
gorgeous.
A wake up. And even if it's raining, you look out and you're like, oh, even the rain coming over the mountains looks awesome. Right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Whenever you get an opportunity to sort of look to the, I think it's north there, and see the presidentials, specifically Mount Washington, but really it's all just a gorgeous view in so many directions. You just look up, stop, wow, and then realize you're just in one of the more beautiful places in the world. It's gorgeous. It never gets old. And I've been going for years.
You have. It's June 13th through 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. Fork Fest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. Fork Fest is decentralized. That means there's no ticket cost and no one is in charge. So if you want an event, bring the event. Be the event you want to see at Fork Fest. Don't count on somebody else having the event you might want to attend, right? Bring the event you want to see there. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website, forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. We hope to see you there. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the captain.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
And coming to you remote from Florida, Mark Edge.
We got Mark saying his own thing now.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you know, well, Peakless didn't do it.
Thanks for picking up Peakless's slack, then, Mark. We appreciate you.
You know, I can do that. I can do that for you.
It sounds so good when you do it.
We've been talking about, in the previous segment, we talked a little bit about philosophy or whatever, but like we've been talking about this situation in Arizona where there is a person, her name is Christine Searle, and she is a horse trainer in Arizona on the verge of losing her life savings over an unpaid $1,607.68 property tax bill. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled already in Minnesota that situations like this are no, right? Like, no good. We're not going to, like, that is theft of the highest order, and that, like, a state should not be able to steal or take, forfeit somebody's home, put it on the market, and then take all of the proceeds.
Don't you love how they only occasionally follow their own rules?
This is why I'm so anti-state.
See, you need to know all of our rules. I mean, that's physically impossible and no one's ever done it, but it is required of everyone. We, on the other hand, don't have to know any of them.
The states that are currently most able to sell your home out from under you should you owe some amount of tax money that is unpaid are Alabama, Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Massachusetts, Minnesota, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, and South Dakota. There are others. Those are just like the most, like the states where this is most applicable. And she happens to be in Arizona. A county treasurer can place a lien on property for taxes owed in Arizona. These financial claims are then sold at an online auction. In the auction, buyers bid the lowest interest rate they intend to charge property owners to redeem the lien. The bidding begins at 16%, and the lowest bid wins. Now, I know about everyone else, but I bought my property in 2020, and I got, you know, way less than 16% interest on my mortgage. So, like, to me, that's just rape.
Yeah.
Like, that interest rate is insane. That's the beginning interest rate is 16. It can go up from there.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't go lower, according to this article.
Well, it just goes to show that really what she should have done is borrow money from a different mafia to pay off this mafia, and then she would still have her house.
The multi-mafia effect, you say?
I mean, sure, they might charge 30% interest, but they'll only charge it on the 16,000 instead of the 400,000.
You mean 1,600?
Yeah, sorry, okay. 1,600.
Purchasing a tax lien doesn't transfer ownership of the property in Arizona. The property owner has 3 years to pay back the taxes, which includes fees and interest. If it is not redeemed within that time, the lien holder may foreclose and sell the property. Unsold tax liens are turned over to the state. The state has the same right to foreclose, but must return any excess proceeds to the former property owner. In 2005, Ms. Searle bought a three-bedroom, two-bath house as a rental property for $255,000. The house is in Gilbert, Arizona, 22 miles southeast of Phoenix. Its 2024 property tax appraisal came to $376,800, but she stands to lose much more than the taxable value. Various real estate websites estimate the current market value to sit somewhere between $420,000 and $510,000. Far more than, you know, what the...
1600.
Yeah. The investment firm Arapahoe LLC Tesco purchased the tax lien on Ms. Searle's property when it bought all of Maricopa County's 2015 and 2016 tax liens. Wait. If I read this correctly, I didn't know this until now, or it didn't sink in until now, that there are companies that purchase tax liens?
Mm-hmm.
And they just buy all?
Oh, yeah.
Like this company apparently bought
whatever they can get.
All
yeah.
of Maricopa County's 2015 and 2016 tax liens. They're like, ah, you know what? Anybody that owes some taxes this year, we'll buy them all.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's a great deal.
What a good deal.
Yeah,
for them.
They get to pay this little amount. And if you can't pay off that lien, then it's just, I mean, almost free property for them.
Almost. Arapahoe stands to gain a significant profit if it sells the property under current law. Arapahoe's contact information was not available. An internet search showed that the Phoenix company, which is involved in a number of legal actions in Arizona, lists Hamilton Municipal Financing of Altamonte Springs, Florida, as a principal. Hamilton is incorporated in Delaware. Well, I mean, we know how these things work. Like, people incorporate in New Hampshire all the time for certain, you know, benefits, or they're trying to avoid a tax of this nature or the other nature. Same thing with Delaware.
That, no, that is literally the only thing I know about Delaware, is that they are where all of the credit card companies, all of the banks, and an extraordinary number of corporations are.
I remember growing up, and like, you would hear these, like, you know, these, I don't call them infomercials, but commercials, like, you know, are you an inventor? Right. Please, blah, 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 blah. Mail your stuff to blah, 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 blah. Concord, New Hampshire. Right. Mm. I remember like a bunch of things being advertised in New Hampshire because arguably New Hampshire still legally is like the freest state for businesses to operate, or at least one.
Yeah,
of.
It definitely comes up two or three in the Cato lists.
Right.
And they, you know, they only really pay attention to the financial freedoms.
Right. And I, like, I'm saying incorporate. Like, if you want to own and run a business and you don't have the headquarters, you want somewhere that's, like, tax-friendly, yes, consider Maryland, consider New Hampshire, consider, you know, I don't know, Arizona, Montana. There's a number of places you might consider depending on how tax-friendly you want your business to be. So, according to PLF, tax liens are popular with banks, investment firms, and other entities. Public data gathered by PLF shows that Maricopa County sold 567 tax liens between 2012 and 2021. A review of those records by the Epoch Times found that at least 424 of them, or three quarters of those purchasers, were businesses, not individuals.
Mm-hmm.
This is based on buyers being listed as incorporated, an LLC, or a trust, or a DBA.
Well, and this is the basic way that the financial and business structure of America runs. Everything is founded around the government. Like, everything. If you are not some kind or another of a cantillionaire,
yeah,
you do not succeed in America. It's really that simple.
It's true.
You know, this is just another version of like the prison industrial complex, where again, all of their customers are not there by choice.
Yeah, I remember Saturday Night Live. Mark, you're about my age, and probably remember Saturday Night Live. They used to have Chris Farley on there, who would do a bit. And it was like a derogative bit about, like, you will end up living in a van down by the river. Right, yeah. And that was a joke, right? Nowadays, like, the kids growing up today are thinking, like, man, I will be lucky if I make enough money to buy
to
a
live
van.
In
to have my river. Own van?
Down by the river.
Well, and you know what? I am not paying any property taxes on my van.
You got to pay registration, but, you know, if you do the Montana thing, you know there's there's a dance you can do to sort of get around that kind of a thing. But, yeah, you're right. You might have to pay some form of, I mean, you got to pay tax on the gas whenever you fuel up or diesel or whatever it is. You also have to figure out where you're going to park from time to time.
And I think this is a big part of what is meant by the phrase, you will own nothing and be happy. Now, the owning nothing comes from things like this. Can you really say that you own a thing when you must pay someone else in order to maintain control of it? And, as far as being happy, that's what the drugs are for. And soon, soon brain chips.
It's so weird to me, like, as a Gen Xer, where, like, drugs, if you will, illegal drugs, were always the, like, you know, anti-establishment thing, like, screw the establishment. I'm going to go over here and do drugs tonight, right? You know, that was the kind of thing. Now, the establishment is all about drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, drugs are, like, the forefront of the establishment.
Oh, yeah. Most people are on them.
They not only don't frown upon you, but they encourage you to be on drugs.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just a question of who's providing them.
So, I mean, it's another question that I hadn't really thought of too much, but if they offer a drug, whatever it might be, where you're happy all of the time, I'm not talking about addled, I'm just talking about happy, then that would certainly solve all the political conflicts out there. I don't know that I would take the advice of anybody who was on the drug. How does
that solve political conflict?
Well, everybody's happy. Nobody's unhappy.
Right, but like how... okay, so... everybody starts taking this drug, and there's like, I don't know, Biden and Trump running for president, right? Like,
sure.
How does people go, oh, I'm happy. Oh, and Trump's still running, and Biden's still running. I'm so happy about that. Like, I don't understand how that.
I don't know how democracy would work, but there's a good chance that fewer people would go to the polls at all. I mean, most people now, at this time, seem driven to the polls by unhappiness.
What do the Polish people have to deal with any of this, Mark?
Whether it's fear, which is certainly a form of unhappiness, or you know, anger, or whatever the feeling you have about one of those two particular candidates, it's likely a feeling that we would call unhappiness.
I think that's fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So you also have to consider that the fluoride that they put in every city water stream is chemically effectively a form of Xanax. I mean, it doesn't make you happy, but it does make you a little bit zen and kind of numb to everything, so that things just don't affect you as much.
Why did more people vote in the 2020 election than any election that had ever occurred before?
Well, that would be Orange Hitler, of course.
Okay. Well, they're unhappy about him.
That's true. He managed to pierce the veil of Xanax because the terror of that cartoon character being king is greater than the power of the waterborne Xanax.
Recently, some other people were naming like random phrases that people would say as band names, and I think Veil of Xanax is a great band name.
Yeah, it's an awesome one. You're right.
Retirement plan upended. So, Miss Searle, the lady in this story we've been talking about, she's about 70 years old and, you know, near retirement age. The story continues that she sits on a metal patio chair under a shady tree in front of some stables and talks about her retirement plan. I have all my money invested in that home as my retirement instead of putting it in a CD or some kind of bank account. I can make a little money on the side to pay the mortgage and keep and sell it when I need the money, she said. She's shocked at how close she is to losing her life savings to an investment firm. For 18 years, she lived in Chandler, Arizona with her husband and son,
Somebody
Randy.
Didn't watch South Park, and it's gone. Yeah.
According to Ms. Searle, she left a typically comfortable suburban middle-class American life. Her then-husband worked for a jewelry and memorabilia company serving high schools and colleges, and she trained horses. She knew it was possible to lose property over unpaid taxes, but that happened to other people. It wasn't part of her life or something she really knew much about. I didn't think about it, she said. Now, this brings up an interesting thing that most people don't talk about. And that is the system, if you will, government, right, for lack of a better term, or government in cooperation with their corporate fascist friends, their banks, the Federal Reserve, et cetera, and so on. Endeavor to keep you busy. So busy that you don't have time to think about things, to investigate things, to figure out things that you otherwise might be drawn to.
Well, then you might want to make decisions. And that's their job.
Right. Exactly. And so this is, I believe, an example that we're seeing right here in print. She knew it was possible to lose property over unpaid taxes, but that happened to other people, not her. Oh, it wouldn't happen to NIMBY, not in my backyard, right? Yeah, that would never happen to me. It wasn't part of her life or something she really knew much about. Now, maybe she had heard something about other people losing property in the past, but didn't have the time to look into it, didn't have the time to read the articles or investigate the situation.
And certainly didn't have time to do anything about it.
Right.
And that really is the problem. And this is with absolutely everything. It's unfortunately apparently a part of the human makeup that until it is forced upon you as a problem, we just don't do anything about any of these huge problems that exist.
We, Mark, you'll know this, and you too, Peakless. We've talked many times about what is the thing that wakes people up out of their statism into libertarian anarchism, you know, voluntarism, whatever that is, right? Right. What is it that, like, we can't find, and I still can't find, like, a rhyme or a reason to it, with the exception of people who have been wronged by the state, right?
That certainly helps. Well, so here's one fact that is really important to note. Somewhere around 85%. Some people say higher numbers, some people say lower numbers. I think it's a spectrum, but I like the number 85. Somewhere around 85% of people generally, this is not Americans, it's people on the planet, value social cohesion, group cohesion, people being happy with each other over the truth.
Ooh.
Fact.
And there are people who run towards the end of that little thing. People like, you know, hosts of Free Talk Live, right? Where right. We value the truth over making people happy.
Right.
Some of us, sadly, value making people unhappy over the truth. But, you know, nonetheless. And that's kind of the first thing I would say about it is as far as what it takes to make somebody a libertarian. The second thing I...
Okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Well, so, I mean, with that one, it's really just a question of in what time frame? Because, like, if you want people to be happy with each other now, this second, this quarter, this week, then the truth really doesn't matter all that much. If you want people to get along for any sustained period of time, then the truth is absolutely indispensable.
I hear you.
And that's really the difference is what's your time structure?
I hear you. And I think that politicians attempt, I don't think they do this intentionally, but I think they attempt to balance sort of the truth of it all and the making people happy thing. So if you wanted.
No. I disagree completely. I think politicians are trying to give you some version of those two things in order to benefit themselves.
I can think of literally two people that, you know, as far as like national politics goes, that I think the truth has ever crossed their mind. And that's Thomas Massie and Ron Paul.
Well, every politician knows that if they raised the minimum wage to $100 an hour and they printed a whole bunch of money and inflated everything, that people would be very happy in the short term and that they would get elected the next go around.
Mm-hmm.
But they would probably get themselves in big trouble the go around after that. They know they can't just, you know, totally nosedive the economy for their own benefit.
$1,000 an hour minimum wage.
Right. So
yeah, I was going to say 100's actually pretty reasonable at this point. I mean, like that is literally only a fourfold increase of like the going political movement right now.
25?
Yeah, 25.
I haven't
is
heard
the
25.
Yeah, no, that's the current.
That's the new one.
Yeah, that is the current push for minimum wage.
Like, what do you think a person at McDonald's is making in New Hampshire right now?
Jack squat.
You know, well, what I mean is dollars per hour.
Oh, probably 15 idea. Bucks. Yeah, probably 15.
I was thinking 20, but I could be wrong. You know, I don't know.
Somewhere in between there. Okay, so let's go 16.50.
Okay.
Yeah, and fun fact, we have no state minimum wage. We only have the federal minimum wage to worry about.
And no one makes that here.
No one
makes
that.
I can tell.
Literally no one.
There is not a job. I mean, maybe there's like a waitress position where it makes the minimum and then the rest is tips.
Right.
But like overall, if you work a 40-hour week, you're certainly not making minimum wage and that's all of your income.
Yeah, it's really hard to make $15 an hour in the United States from what I can see. Now, I haven't seen everywhere, but everything I see advertising for workers is like $18 an hour and up.
Yeah. 603-283-6160 is the telephone number if you would like to join us tonight on Free Talk Live. We've been talking about this lady in Arizona who could lose her $400,000 home for a $1,600 tax bill. And we've got more in store for you, including, could Julian Assange walk free? Coming up, it's Free Talk Live.
Protection. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster. Police state.
It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
It is Free Talk Live, coming to you on this fine Saturday evening. It is, what are we on? We're in hour number two, segment two. Each segment is about a half hour. And if you'd like to join us in the conversation, the telephone number is 603-283-6160. Again, 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass.
And Peakless Mountaineer. And joining us remotely from Florida,
it's the guy who stepped away from his computer during the break. Co-founder of this show, known as Mark Edge.
And currently susceptible to any of the crap that we want to talk about.
What's really weird is, like, I can hear things going on in the background of wherever he's at. Like, even though, like, he just sat down, you know, he's scratching his head. He's like, oh, gosh, is the show started already? I don't even know. Maybe I should put on my headphones and see if the show is going right now. Yes, good idea. Very well, Mark. Yes, good job. Well done. Yes.
Terribly sorry. I didn't realize that we were back.
Bottom of the hour.
Oh, you didn't?
Mark, you've been doing
this show. We
barely
even noticed.
For some time. The bottom of the hour is the short one.
Indeed.
Not that I need to tell you that. We've been talking about this situation where this lady in Arizona.
Well, before we get back to that, I wanted to hear Mark's other thing that he had noticed about people's transition into libertarianism.
Oh, right. We talked about like what is the thing that like wakes people up out of statism,
right,
and brings them into libertarianism, voluntarism, anarchism, whatever you want to call
it. I definitely think he's definitely onto something with that first point of like 85% of people, give or take, have just a way higher preference of getting along than of consistency or principles or truth.
So which is to say that they will never be libertarians.
So what's the other?
Well, I'm sorry. Which is to say that they will only be libertarians when being a libertarian makes sense.
Right. Or when it's popular.
Right.
Right. Right. What we now have is, you know, socialists running as the Democratic Party and people who will be equivalent to the Democratic Party in 10 years. Right, like they're just 10 years behind the Democratic Party is mm-hmm. what the Republican Party is.
Socialists driving the speed limit.
Right. You know, that's what you got. So the whole thing is socialism.
Yes.
Cultural Marxism, well, whatever you want to call
well,
it.
No. Whole thing is socialism. Republicans and Democrats are both socialists.
No, I don't think so.
No, they are. They just argue about how to spend everybody else's money differently.
Well, so the Republicans and some of the Democrats have fought for the nominal right to own property. Now, they both want the government to tell you what to do with that property. And that makes them fascists,
right,
not socialists.
I mean,
there is a difference.
In that particular slice, sure, I'll agree with you. But the overall picture is they're both socialists because
right,
they keep supporting the socialism that is the United States of America.
Well, and ironically, we have achieved a truly communist and Marxist system through fascism in our central bank.
It's so disgusting to think about that.
See, having a central bank is one of the pillars of Marxist communism. And we have achieved this through our corporations.
Yeah.
So,
Mark, what was the second thing? Like you mentioned the first thing was the 85%. What was the other thing that wakes people up?
The other thing that I would say is that this town that I've talked about previously, this housing development
Prospera?
called Morazan. Okay. What's that? Housing development.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's called Morazan. It's in Chiloma, Honduras, and it is essentially a special economic zone that's privately owned by a libertarian billionaire who can basically set all his own rules, and people willingly move there. They're treated with dignity there. They're able to own a home that is not a tin shack there, and they're kids are able to take normal showers and, you know, everything that you would imagine is sort of a modern home, a cheap one, but, you know, it's clean and it's well constructed.
Inexpensive, not cheap, right?
Inexpensive, right. That's a better term. And these people essentially are operating in a libertarian system and they act libertarian. Now, let me give you a couple of examples, because what does acting libertarian mean?
Acting genius, thank you.
It means it means essentially not initiating force against your neighbor in order to solve your problems. But I think most people don't generally. But what happens if we sort of take them out of the old paradigm, these antiquated encumbrances that we call government now, and we go to something that is faster, more nimble, and more fair? So this is, and it's important to note, this is Chiloma, Honduras is the most violent city, or at least was in the recent past, in a country that was, in the recent past, the most violent country on Earth that wasn't a war zone.
Very recently, yeah.
So the country, the most violent, and then the city, even more violent, because it's the most violent within that territory.
Correct. So let's just call this a pretty darned violent place for a place that's not at war. And this housing development, essentially. All they did, put up a 10-foot wall, and they got like 7, 8, 9, 10 security guards.
Okay.
That keep everybody safe. And they had a violent incident a few months ago where a man decided to push his wife up against the wall while arguing at a party. They have parties every weekend there. They love pinatas. By the way, pinatas, not Honduran, but they love them nonetheless. And
what are the pinatas filled with in candy. Honduras? Same thing. Okay. All right, just checking. Yeah. I was is it like joints? Is it like, you know?
How not libertarian kind of are we okay. talking here?
All right. Anyway, continue. I didn't
Our pinatas will be filled with drugs and AK-47s.
At least some ammunition or something. Right? Anyway,
that might not be the best choice for something you're going to whack with a stick. Just thinking that.
I didn't mean to interrupt your. You were on a roll. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Right. So basically, the security guards stopped this incident, and they, you know, wanted to know what to do. The guy who runs the place came up with a solution. He talked to the woman to make sure what she wanted to achieve.
Oh, my God. You mean non-state intervention into a societal dispute?
Well, and even bigger than that, actually consulting the victim on what would make them whole.
Whoa.
Just mind-blowing.
These are unheard of.
And they came up with a solution that he should be banished for 2 weeks, and then he would be able to return. He left for 2 weeks. He came back, and everything's been bright and sunny since then. Essentially, he found out that the way that, you know, he was told that he was able to handle a personal relationship up to that point wasn't going to work here, so he changed his behavior. Pretty awesome.
Absolutely Second story, beautiful.
Yeah. Second story, a guy moves in. He runs up a bill at the local, it's called a pulperia, but call it a convenience store that people run out of their house.
A bodega.
Yeah, bodega is another good term. And he runs up a bill. You know, they're making him food. They're like, wait, this is a great customer. And I think it's a $250 bill. I may be wrong on that, but, you know, $250 is quite a bit there. It's 2 months rent almost. And essentially, he leaves for a few days, and at that point, his apartment's considered abandoned. And the management says, "Okay, well, you can have whatever's in that house in order to make the, you know, they had to prove that there was a bill and all that stuff." But everybody knew there's only 64 units there. Everybody knows. Okay. And the guy and they gave whatever was in the unit to the pulperia, and they took like the couch and I think there were some appliances or whatever, and they took whatever they wanted. And the guy comes back and says, "Hey, I want to get my stuff out of my unit," which, of course, at this point he was in arrears for. But they're like, essentially, "Yeah, well, you got to get your stuff and get out. Clean out anything you want to clean out.
Yeah.
Get it out of there because we're gonna, you know, throw it all in the dumpster tomorrow." And the guy's like, "Glad I got here in time." He's like, "Where's my couch and some appliances?" "Oh no, we gave that to the bodega. You owed them money." You know, like he was upset that he didn't get to rip people off because the old system, the Honduran civil system, was never going to hold him responsible.
Right.
But this system held him responsible and held him responsible quickly. And so he ended up leaving, by the way, and, you know, he could never get any what he called justice because they don't have power inside the special economics.
Did he take his stuff?
No, he did not clean out his unit. I mean, he may have taken a little bit of stuff, but essentially the people that have to clean the house cleaning.
Yeah,
staff
the little secret ahead. Stash he had, like, you know, underneath the coffee table or whatever he probably got. But like he didn't like clean the place. Right. It wasn't left in like move in condition for the next person. Right.
No. So he did not get his deposit back. And all this is possible because of the system that they have there at Morazan. And the whole idea is that up until this point, we've libertarians have converted people by saying, "Read this book." And, you know, we've handed them Economics in One Lesson or
Mises, Rothbard, et cetera and so on.
Fountainhead,
right.
Atlas Shrugged. You pick. Heinlein's another good one. Whatever the book might be, we're like, "This is the book. Read this book."
Oh, dude.
And then the person,
Roger Ver's
if they in fact read it.
Roger Ver's got a new book out about the Bitcoin split, by the way.
Oh, the block size wars?
Yeah, we can talk about that later. I just wanted to mention that to you. Anyway, go ahead.
Yep. So basically, you know, most people aren't going to read the book, but, you know, you try and maybe some of your friends read it and then some of them convert. And then you're like, yay, I converted somebody to libertarianism. And then after 3 or 5 years or whatever, they're not as passionate about it as they were. And then what? You know, and ultimately, libertarians, us, we're a type, right? Like, we're a personality type. And we stay passionate about liberty for a reason. That is, you know, whatever the reason is, it's because of how our personalities are, not because this is, you know, this is a religion or anything like that. And so ultimately what I would say is the best way to convert people to liberty, that 85% of people that I was talking about,
yeah,
is to essentially create a libertarian place. And then the people who are in that place will begin acting like libertarians.
Right. And that's kind of like I know a lot of people, I know some people who are like, hey, look, man, we're libertarian, voluntarist, anarchist, whatever you want to call it. Like, we subscribe to the non-aggression principle, and there's not a chance in hell that it's going to be popular. We are the unpopular way of seeing things because, as Mark, you pointed out earlier, most people want to be a part of the crowd. They want to go along to get along, even if it means they're wrong, even if it means it's not the truth. They want to be a part of, like, oh, well, everybody else is doing this thing, so I'm going to do this thing, right? That's how Nazism came to be.
Well, so right? I think you're wrong there. I think that this is,
go on.
Not only is this going to be popular, it's going to be popular sooner than you might expect.
I hope. Now, like, no, I hope and I want, but like.
Well, so let me lay out why I think this is the case. Now, I think that Mark is absolutely dead on. The vast majority of people will do whatever is easiest to do. The reason that people aren't libertarians in an illiberal society, in the classical sense of the word, is because it's easier to be authoritarian in an authoritarian society. And the only thing that's going to make them appreciate and perform according to property rights and liberty is if that's what everyone's doing, and it becomes more difficult not to do that. Now, there are two things that are happening simultaneously that I think are completely and radically transforming not just America, but the entire planet right now. Now, one of these is we have fundamentally shifted where we are getting our information and how we are getting our information.
Okay.
And both of those are really important factors. So number one, we're not getting our information from controlled corporate state subsidized sources.
Okay.
And number two, we're not getting our information spoon-fed to us. Now, that seems like a small thing, but it's actually huge neurologically, because when your nervous system engages the I'm going to seek out something dangerous protocol,
yeah,
it works completely differently. It doesn't look for easy solutions. It doesn't look for what everyone's doing. It looks for tools. It looks for new things. It thinks creatively. So number one, you have a different source of information. Number two, you're finding it in a different way. And this is all one big thing.
Yeah.
And they have just gone through this process where almost everybody knows someone who is vaccine injured.
Yeah.
That's where we are right now.
Yeah, no, I know.
Yeah. Too.
But also, I want to talk about what you said about how your brain works differently if you seek out information that is sort of contrary to the norm. I was working at a very large software company based in Seattle, Washington, whose name I will not mention. You all know who this is, right? It rhymes, yep, with Yul Bates, right? You know, if that gives you any clue. Anyway, so I'm there, and I'm doing my job, and I'm part of this team that's doing the early version of this particular software company's online meeting software, right? Their, group. Like Jitsi or something like that, or Zoom, you know, it's the early version, their early version of that. And so I had some free time to play with, and somebody had sent me a link to, we mentioned it earlier, Aaron Russo's Fascism or Freedom to Fascism.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching that thing while I'm doing, like, it's on one screen. I got three screens, right? It's on one screen. I'm doing my work on the other two screens. And so I'm watching this thing, and it occurs to me that, like, man, I'm watching something that, like, they, quote unquote, won't like.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know who they are at this point, but, like, I'm watching this. I'm looking over my shoulders, right? I'm like, who's watching me watch this? Okay, it doesn't look like anybody's watching. But, like, you know, it's a large software company, and, like, they could be just monitoring my computer at whatever time, whatever.
Right.
So I start getting all sorts of paranoid. But at the same time, you're right. I started looking for ways to, like, oh, how do I combat this new information that I've just taken in? That there is something called asset forfeiture,
mm-hmm.
right?
Like civil asset forfeiture.
Like, how do I combat this? If I ever own property, how do I protect myself from that happening? Right? I'm starting mm-hmm. to think about these things. And so I'm looking these things up online through my favorite search engine or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. As soon as I had this new information in front of me, my brain started to work differently and creatively, even though I didn't even own property at the time.
Yeah.
I was so, like, blown away by what the government has done to these other people by taking their property, by quote-unquote civil asset forfeiture, unquote, and, like, selling it all, keeping the profit for themselves, etc., and so on. Or even just taking it as a course of, like, well, we're going to build an off-ramp for the freeway. Screw your house, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these people had no way of defending themselves from this outside of, like, shooting at the people who came to take their property,
right?
And they weren't willing to engage in that level of defense of their property,
right?
They probably would have lied. Everybody knows the government has more guns than you do, right? So, like, engaging in that is, like, a last-ditch effort most of the time.
Since you mention it, it's worth considering the fact that basically everyone's just doing the easiest possible thing. That includes the sheriff that repossesses your house. So it is the fact that...
Sure.
That do you know how many people will shoot at the sheriff when they try to repossess their house?
But they won't shoot at
nearly
the
zero.
Zero.
But they didn't
approximately
shoot the
zero. Now, if that shifts from zero, which we might actually see soon, because like this entire money system is set for an in breath and an out breath, if you will.
Yeah.
So they breathe out debt, poverty, and easy money, and then they breathe in all of your property.
And your
now,
fear.
Right. Right now, we are in that breathe-in moment where they are snatching people's properties left and right.
Yep.
And at some point, there reaches a point where people have no ability to do anything except shoot the police. And I don't know if we're going to be able to avoid that. That would be preferable. But we might very well see the point where... sheriffs stop trying to take property because they realize how dangerous it is.
Well, yeah, I think that would be where what we're talking about is,
and
if
that
you,
would
if
and
you
that...
get to the point where the people are holding up the moonshiner over the revenuer,
right?
And we've been there before.
Yep.
Just think about the words I've used: moonshiner and revenuer.
Mm-hmm.
If we get to that point again, which I mean, it by the looks of it. The system looks very much like it's designed to gobble up everything that is owned by people who are in the bottom 90%. It looks like it's being rigged. It has been rigged that way.
Yep.
I'm not saying it has, but it sure feels
I'll say it has. I can give you details if you're interested, but
no,
it absolutely is designed for that purpose.
As a person who has been employed to look at systems and work with systems, the only way you know if a system is doing its job, the thing it was engineered to do, is to look at the output of said system. Now, if you look at the output of the United States federal government, well, it is not creating a free place for people to be happy and prosperous and like, you know,
and it's
none
really
of that.
Simple. And if you just look at, like, there's an old Jefferson quote, and just look up the phrase, first by inflation, then by deflation, and he talks about how people will be homeless on the continent that their fathers fought for. Yes, that is the design of our banking system. Now
I will that's not a Jefferson quote, but it is attributed to him. But it's darn true. I mean, everything about that statement appears to be true, and I agree with you that we're there. It's just as I've heard that it's a allegorical statement or whatever the situation, whatever they call that, apocryphal. Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
So,
and anyway, I think that it's still possible. I'd love to believe at the very least that it is possible to employ thrift in the United States and still beat the system. To buy the things you need to buy and, you know, have success and put some money away and, you know, do all the right things. And then, like, you may very well rise to the surface.
Well, and this brings me to the other, because I said there were two. There are two ways in which we might very well see it become the easiest thing to do to just be libertarian. And one of them is the information, because we are ruled over by lies. That is just how this system works. As soon as we start knowing what's really going on. So that's the first one. The second one is money. Now, there is a way of putting aside money in a way that completely defeats their entire machinations of every banking system in the world. Bitcoin is an example of this. So's Dash, for that matter. These are ways of saving up money so effectively that the entire global control grid just can't stop it. And you, by doubling the purchasing power of your saved money every year, you can, in fact, defeat them peacefully. Now, give this a little bit of time to really get going, because we are only reaching the end of the beginning at about, say, the end of this year. So give this a little bit of time to get going, and this will take over the entire planet. And at that point, it just becomes easier to use Bitcoin than to not use Bitcoin. And the thing is that this creates, by its very nature, a system that is fundamentally fair, universally acceptable, and can't be gamed. And it's property rights written into the code.
The only semantic I would argue is I would say cryptocurrency instead of Bitcoin. Because, like, like, we've been talking a little bit. I know on the, I think, was it this Wednesday? I wasn't, I didn't listen to the show, but we were supposed to have Silver Dave on, and he was supposed to talk with the hosts about, like, silver versus cryptocurrency and have some sort of a debate on that. Because apparently Silver Dave and at least one of our former co-hosts who sort of works with him in, you know, trying to make this silver thing that they've got going, they've got an enterprise going on, work, have been, have taken up the marketing strategy of crapping on Bitcoin, right?
And well, and I say Bitcoin because that's the best savings tool, and the ones that are best beside those are offshoots of that protocol.
We'll come back to talk of all this. Mark, I know you have much to say on this topic.
I do.
We also have, you know, your calls if you dial 603-283-6160. Hour number three of Free Talk Live is still to come. Plus, will Julian Assange walk free? We've got information. More is coming up.
Free Talk Live.
Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in and listening to tonight's edition of Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, the live call-in radio talk program where you can talk about whatever's on your mind. The telephone number here in the Free Talk Live studio, 603-283-6160. Again, 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the Reverend Captain Kickass of CaptainKickass.com. Joining me,
Beakless Mountaineer, and joining us remotely from Florida,
Mark Edge.
You stole his thunder.
He likes the way I sound when I say it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I like it.
I'll let you guys Rochambeau or whatever you got to do to, you know, to get that announcement part
well,
in there.
Unlike value, I can't really like. Oh, you mean rock paper scissors? See, there's two games of Rochambeau, and one of them requires me to move physically through space that I can't move through.
There's two versions.
Oh yeah.
Is that like Monopoly?
No, and it's where you each rack each other, and then whoever falls over first loses.
That's one version?
Yeah, and the other one is rock, paper, scissors.
That's a Rochambeau?
Yeah.
Why is it Rochambeau, not Rock, Paper,
Why
Scissors?
Why is either of them Rochambeau?
Well, I don't know.
In fact, Rochambeau kind of sounds like a weird French way of saying rock, paper, scissor.
If I,
That's what I always thought it was, is a funny way of just a French for rock, paper, scissors.
You think Ro is rock and Sham is paper and Beau is scissors?
Yeah.
Well, considering I don't speak French, yes.
In spite of me living in New Hampshire, where we have more French speakers than anywhere else in the country.
Really?
Yeah.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, yeah, that's what proximity to Quebec will do for you.
Comment allez-vous, s'il vous plaît?
Sure.
Anyone? Bueller? No? Okay. No. I learned very little
Something,
French.
Please.
Désolé, je ne parle français.
Simon D. touché les mains. Simon says, like, touch your face.
Right? Ah, nice.
I'm not saying anything that's relevant to the conversation. I'm only spouting, like, some French that I learned when I was, like, 10 years old.
Well, c'est la vie, c'est la guerre, c'est une pomme de terre.
French does sound amazing. Like, when you hear somebody speaking French, you're like, wow, that's elegant, right? It's a very, like, unlike, like, German, like, is very, and, like, to some extent, this is why Klingon sounds like this. They based it on the German language. It's all mach, doch, 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 doch. It's all hard consonants and K's and, you know, all that kind of stuff. They based it on that specifically for Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, so it's French if you actually pronounce all the silent letters.
Right.
Gotcha.
And do it in a fluid way.
So you're saying in French it would be cabla.
Cabla, blah, blah. It'd be le cabla.
Instead of cabla.
Right. It'd be le cabla. Le cabla, I don't see what I'm or something, right? You know, they add a couple of syllables to make it sound even more hoity than it actually is. Anyway, it's Free Talk Live, 603-283-6160. We've got some calls to get to, so let's do that right now. We have, this is Mark calling from Studio 8424. Mark, you're on Free Talk Live.
That's correct. Je ne parle pas français un peu, and that's all I can tell you.
I love doing that. I love doing the French, like the wah, ha, 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 right? Because it just sounds so cool.
Yeah, it's all stuck up, right? It's like the nose action.
Yeah. But, I want to tell our listeners who aren't familiar with this other Mark. Yes, we're doing the dangerous thing. We have two Marks on Free Talk Live simultaneously. Let's hope that time doesn't warp and we don't fall into a black hole or something like that. But
it'll be Mark squared.
Mark squared. This other Mark from Studio 8424 does a rebroadcast of Free Talk Live every night, or at least as often as he can, and does it in the spirit of pirate radio, if I understand correctly. Is that right, Mark?
Yes. I run a TV and a radio internet broadcaster 24/7. And so radio 8424.com. It plays from 7 to 10 p.m. every night, Free Talk Live.
Thank you for your service.
Well, you know, ever since Ian and I talked back in 2019 and 2020 about doing an LRN feed, you know, and at first he's like, well, you know, are you going to be committed? He didn't really know me that well. I'm like, well, okay, I got to prove it. Well, here it is, you know, 4 years later. But so, you know, I really enjoy the information I get from LRN and from Free Talk Live. And so what I decided to do is just go ahead and broadcast it. And I want to teach people, you know, when they call in, you know, what's the call letters of station they call from. And if they hear from Radio 8424, would they please let them know? Because we get people from across the country. I got a friend in Arizona who drives a tank. He's got one of my bumper stickers on his tank. It's kind of fun.
Wait, you have a friend in Arizona who drives a tank, like as his daily driver?
Oh, well, not a daily driver, but oh, he owns a tank and he has fun with it. And so, you know, he's run over cars with it and stuff like that. You know, I mean, I would just tell you the truth. I wouldn't lie to you. Trust me.
That does sound like something you could charge a price of admission for.
Hold on, Mark.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on, Mark. I think Mark has something to say.
Sure.
Oh, I'm just amazed at the idea of driving a tank. And I hope that tank is running over cars that they purchased for such a thing.
Police cars, actually, but that's another story.
Even better. All right, Mark, 8424, what's on your mind tonight?
So I just wanted to say, you know, when people are actually driving in their car, here's the thing. they can actually open their Bluetooth car radio and they can tune in to radio8424.com and they can listen to Free Talk Live 7 to 10 p.m. every single night. And so I just wanted to let them know there's always a way to do it. Even if you're in a town where there isn't an affiliate, you can get Free Talk Live. You can get all the programming that we offer 24/7. And I want to expand that. So I'm always trying to get people who have programming that are, you know, libertarian, anarchist, you know, all that sort of thing,
volunteers
to
right.
actually be involved and get the information out there. One of the things that really got me was how hoodwinked people got in the last 4 years. And it was like programming. And I thought, well, these black rectangles people have in their pockets and on their mantles are lying to them. And so I could at least be partially responsible for getting the truth out there. So that's why I started my radio and TV stations.
Nice.
And you can do it, and I help people do it.
Be part of the solution, not part of the problem, right?
That's right. That's right. I appreciate very much Ian really giving me kind of the, I guess you might call it the kick in the ass to say, you know, let's just see what you do. And it felt good to be able to accomplish that. Mm. And, you know, you guys, it's a lot of fun. I don't get a chance to really kind of pal around all the time, but just know there's people out there that listen. And it's kind of an ebb and a flow. You get busier sometimes and stuff like that, but it's always nice to come back and listen. And it's like old friends, and it feels good. And there's a lot of good information out there. I really appreciate the, was it Shapeshift letter you had about what the dissenters that you quoted recently.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole lot of stuff going on in crypto right now. And I'm really tired of people looking for the SEC for permission to do things.
Oh,
if we're
going
to do crypto, it needs to be anarchist.
It's so disgusting, isn't it? Like, oh, but we have to wait until our masters tell us it's okay.
Right. If you want to be a bank, go ahead and sign up for it. But if you're not going to be a bank and just do crypto, be your own bank and don't ask permission.
Yeah.
Amen.
And, you know, but I really appreciate you guys. And, yeah, do. If you ever get a chance and you have a chance to actually get a picture of yourself listening to Radio 8424 in your car, do that, because we want to promote the fact that you can get Free Talk Live on Radio 8424 anywhere you are in the country. So
if,
it's a lot of fun.
If people want to know more about what you do and how you do it, how can they find you and what you do?
Yeah, you can find us, obviously, Studio 8424 and Radio 8424. Our moniker's on, say, X or Twitter. But you can also just go to studio8424.com is the TV side, and then radio8424.com is the radio side, and just tune in. And I'm working on building my website, but right now they go straight to the streams. And so that makes it easy, and you can just tune in. The nice thing about listening to the radio is I was able to kind of be a nerd about it, and actually, you know, dial down the output so that you could listen without blowing your data plan on your cell phone.
Oh, nice.
That makes it nice.
Yeah.
But it's
well
a lot of fun.
Well done, man. Well, Mark, we certainly appreciate you calling, and thank you for supporting this show. Anarchists, libertarians, if you're listening, contact Mark at Studio 8424 if you want to get more exposure for your shows. Again, thank you, Mark. We appreciate you. Have a great night. 603-283-6160.
Since he brings up the you know, what's happening today in crypto, there are two attacks that I am just really giddy happy about.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. See, that's the great thing about having an anti-fragile technology. The more they attack it, the happier it makes me. So one of those is that the SEC is going after Ethereum for its staking. Now, one of two things will happen.
I saw that. Yeah, they're trying to make it a security instead of whatever.
Yeah, and for anyone who's completely unfamiliar, Ethereum is the second largest cryptocurrency.
Because we are living in an Ethereum world, and I am an Ethereum girl. Anyway, go ahead.
So this has one of two outcomes. Now, the worst outcome is that it could be, and the more probable one, is that the judge will throw this out, just like they've been throwing out every single thing that the SEC does, and that will make the price of everything skyrocket.
Yep.
And the better outcome is that they'll win. And in that case, we get to get rid of all of this proof of stake nonsense. Because there's, you can either secure your coin by doing work or by owning things.
Proof of stake.
Right. So the argument basically is that proof of stake makes it a security. And I really hope the courts find that to be so. And we can get rid of some of all of this nonsense, because every proof of stake system, it just makes everything ultimately get owned by whoever has the current highest share that they want to stake.
Is there like a beef coin? Like proof of stake, S-T-E-A-K, not S-T-E-A-K-E.
So sort of a meat-backed currency.
That's right, yeah.
No, but there is a proof of pork.
Huh, interesting. Pork coin.
Yeah, one of the...
Pig coin? that has different connotations depending on your position in life and who you're spouting these words at.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other one is, I think it just got passed in the EU, that basically you can't send from a private wallet anymore, which is just beautiful, because try and stop me.
Yeah. How are you going to stop that?
Right. Like,
all right. We have more calls to get to. Let's go over here to David in San Francisco. David, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, how are you? I was also interested in the crypto topic, but it was interesting listening to the fellow before talking about the, was it Radio 8424?
Yes.
Yeah, I Googled it and I found, products called 8424, but I don't find one specifically.
Try Studio 8424, perhaps? I'm not sure.
Studio.
I know he has on the Twitter and or X. I think he has both Radio 8424 and Studio 8424. I'm not sure about that 100%. I know he's on all the alternative, what we call social media sites. That would be like, Mastodon and things of that nature as well. So he's really trying to increase his
podcast
stretch.
He probably described the website a little better and look it up that way.
Sure.
Yeah, it's funny. We got involved in pirate radio out here over 30 years ago,
maybe
35 years ago, when Daddy Bush was in. And there was Full Moon Radio, and then there was San Francisco Liberation Radio.
What was the one that was broadcasting from, like, I'm trying to remember the name of the island now. They did a movie about it, too. I can't remember what it was, but it was pirate radio station. Was it Alcatraz, even? I don't even know. But there was...
He ran if it was San Francisco Liberation Radio, actually his was legal, but it was a 10-watt station, and the FCC, there were no laws if you were below 10 watts. But he was at a fairly high point, if you know about San Francisco, way out by the... at the end of Geary near the Cliff House, he had a fairly high spot up there, and so he could be heard all the way down the coast into San Mateo.
Nice.
But he couldn't be heard downtown. There were, the hills would block it at 10 watts. But
so it's
Full Moon Radio.
It's radio8424.com.
Oh, very nice.
Bypass the Google. In fact, never use them again.
Well, yeah, I can understand. Yeah, I'm noticing a whole bunch of old sites that I used to go to. It's very difficult to find it on Google.
And yes.
It's sad. You know, they used to had a reputation for being all-encompassing, but boy, they try to shut things down.
Yeah, ever since they got rid of their motto of never do evil, like, they're doing just that.
Yeah. Well, regarding Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies, you've heard of the expression full faith and credit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Back, 1776, the 13 colonies were all using, and this was before 1776, the 13 colonies were actually 13 corporations, and they each had their own company script.
Mm-hmm.
So Pennsylvania money didn't work in New Jersey. New Jersey money didn't work in New York.
What do you mean by didn't work? Like, I mean, if I'm a merchant and I'm like, near the border of any of these two places, right? And somebody came to me with some of this corporate script and was like, hey, I'd like to pay you in this. Will you accept it? Don't I have the opportunity, or didn't I at that time have the opportunity to go, sure?
Well, officially, each of the 13 corporations were chartered by the king. And so each of the 13 colonies, there were more than 13 colonies, but it was the 13 colonies that seceded from the king.
Right.
And then there were many more up in Canada and, you know, around, you know, in the islands. But the
So legally, they wouldn't be able to be accepted. So, like, if you wanted to do something sort of below board, you were cool, right?
Well, there's a pretty good book that describes a lot of it. There are many, many monographs that talk about it. But there was an old history book that was common in high schools back in the 1940s and 50s, mm-hmm. called The Origins of the American Revolution. And you can still find it in the in yard sales and whatnot. But it describes how the problems of having 13 different types of money systems, and the values of each of them were based upon whatever the local corporate management.
Well, and the problem is that you have any system that is done by force. I mean, you said yourself that these were commanded by the king to operate in this way. So it wasn't a question of, do I want to accept this? It was a question of, I will be put in jail if I accepted Pennsylvania currency in New Jersey. Whereas...
Well, officially, they wouldn't necessarily put you in jail, but basically what would happen, officially, each of the 13 corporations had to ship their goods to London to get a tax stamp put on it. And then if they wanted to sell something from New Jersey to New York, it had to go all the way to London to get a tax stamp mm-hmm. put on it.
Wow.
And then it got sent back after paying duty.
This is what mm-hmm. I call the monkey dance.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, this was exactly. a huge part, and they never even mentioned this in history books, but that was probably the single largest contributor to the revolution was the fact that we weren't allowed to trade with each other.
Well, right. Each of the 13 corporations were chartered by the king, and they were not allowed to trade with each other unless they had permission of the king. And so it became such a stupid bureaucracy that the 13 colonies basically agreed, or the founding fathers basically agreed that this has just gotten stupid, and in fact the issue of the Tea Party, the Tea Party were not complaining because they were paying too much in taxes. They were they were pissed because there were layers of it, but it was basically that their taxes were being sent to London, and then the king was partying with it and never reinvesting in the local area. So these corporate giants, the 13 corporate giants, were basically having a party with the taxes at the people's expense. And but the issue of cryptocurrencies comes into the full faith and credit that when the 13 colonies became the United States, they decided that they would have a common currency for all of them, the U.S. dollar, and
for a
while it was working.
Who decided?
Well, the founding fathers. When the revolution became successful, there was a common agreement upon. And in fact, it there's layers of it. It during the American Revolution, there was the Continental Dollar.
Right. And, so I was going to mention that the Continental was a fiat currency, but a dollar itself was initially, I think, a Dutch word for like a dollar or something, which was a measurement of an amount of silver.
Actually, that one comes from the mines where it was mined. But yeah. So like the thing is, at all times during this whole thing, you know what never stopped being money? Gold and silver.
Right.
These never stopped being money to anybody.
Or diamonds.
During any of this. Right. Well,
yeah,
no. See,
the value of the gold against whatever the corporate colonial master would tell you it was worth. So the idea of a full faith and credit, and especially for people like farmers. If you were a farmer and you had to go through a flood year, you had to go through a blight year, a drought year, it was tough enough to get a crop turned in, But then when it came time to sell it, if somebody decided to play with the value, that the currency speculators decided to drop the value of the currency by or the value of the gold by 20%, your hard work was diminished by 20%. And right. What I'm seeing with these cryptocurrencies is the people that are interested in the cryptocurrencies they love the idea that the crypto is bouncing around because they can play games with, you know, the margins. And the full faith and credit is something that if there was a stability to the U.S. dollar, that the full faith and credit, you could have Georgia goods transported to Tennessee or something, and the value would be the same on both sides of the state line, and that there would be a stability to it. And the people that were loving the gold were the ones that were trying to bounce the value of the gold so that they could make money at harvest time, or they could make money at the planting time when they were doing speculation on the Chicago board.
David, trade. Can you hold on?
Sure.
All right, stand by, because I think he has more to say. I know Peekless and Mark, you both have more to say about this.
Oh, yes, I have much to say.
I'd like to bring David back, if that's okay with you guys. Stick around.
I'll allow it.
We have more Free Talk Live coming up, including the rest of what David has to say. And if we can get to it, will Julian Assange walk free? Free Talk Live. More coming up. It is Free Talk Live, your favorite on-air live call-in radio talk program. We're here every Saturday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. If you want to call and speak to us or talk about whatever's on your mind, please call between the hours of 7 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Sometimes our affiliates or our rebroadcasters or pirate radio stations, which we love, by the way. If you're a pirate radio station, please broadcast or rebroadcast Free Talk Live.
Keep up the good work.
We encourage you. Thank you for your service. But if you want to call and get on the air, we're on, I don't know, 180 or so radio stations, 200 radio stations, 300 radio stations. If you want to help us get on to more radio stations, well, you can certainly do that by becoming a member of the AMPS program. In fact, Tom McMillan is tonight's amplifier. We want to say thank you to Tom McMillan. He is a gold-level amplifier. What does it mean to be a gold-level amplifier, Peekless?
It means that you amplify so much that you get made entirely of gold.
That's not true.
Oh, it does. Okay. No, it means that you amplify by $20, is it?
I think it's 10. So silver is 5, gold is 10, and platinum is 20, I think. I don't know. Let's unmute Mark and see if he knows.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, very good. Let's mute Mark again so he doesn't interfere with the show. I'm just kidding, Mark. Just kidding. Tom McMillan is a gold-level amplifier of this show. You can become an amplifier over at amps.freetalklive.com. It's a Patreon-type setup, and so if you contribute, then there's some perks that you get. There's the amp-only podcast, which is commercial-free, stuff like that. There's some perks, but like that's not why you should amp. You should amp because you enjoy the show, the hosts, the co-hosts, the perspective of freedom, liberty, peace, and prosperity that we bring to the airwaves. We want to get on more radio stations. Like I said, we're on around 200 or so radio stations. We could be on 300, 400. It's not out of the question. It's all up to you. That's where the money goes for the AMPS program, is to help amplify us. Advertise, market, promote, and support is what the acronym stands for, AMPS. You can find out more over at amps.freetalklive.com. Thank you again, Tom McMillan. We appreciate your contributions. All right, so let's bring David. David, are you there?
Oh, sure.
Awesome. You're back online with us. And so we were discussing essentially the history of, you know, the 13 colonies, their currency, and you were comparing that to, like, cryptocurrency in some way. And I know Peakless and Mark both, you know, had things that they were not quite saying yet, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to finish your statement.
Yeah, well, it had to do with people that were playing games with the value of the money and then demanding, you know, a piece of the action of every transaction that ever happened.
Like the government?
And so when you start looking at whether it's the 13 scripts, company scripts, or the U.S. dollar, in the very beginning, there was the Continental dollar. And it was pretty popular, and George Washington and the founding fathers were able to get a lot done with it. But after a while, the British started to counterfeit it. And you may have heard the expression, it's not worth a continental. And that was when there was so much counterfeit continental dollars floating around that George Washington was freezing at Valley Forge because he couldn't afford to buy firewood. He couldn't afford to buy food with the continental dollars. And
I only heard that expression one time before, and I thought it was because, like, it wouldn't buy a Lincoln Continental.
Oh, no. It goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War. And it, as a matter of fact, the fact that George Washington beat the Hessians by crossing the Delaware in the middle of the night on Christmas Eve, he didn't even have any bullets when he beat them. They just clubbed the Hessians to death while they slept. They basically beat them with you know, the butts of their guns and won in the battle. And that gave so much support to the revolution that I'll say Ben Franklin, but the people with the printing presses decided to get out printing presses and come up with, it was called the New American Tenor. And that it was a new continental dollar. I think it was called that was the first time it was called the U.S. dollar.
Okay.
And they came up with, for example, in New Jersey, I remember they had local leaves. And they would press them into the paper, and the British would have had to have, in order to do a counterfeit, they would have had to have had those leaves to be able to create counterfeit. But there were the new American tenor were able to buy supplies again and win the revolution. But the issue about the cryptocurrencies to this day. The fact that there are people who want the bounce, they don't want a stable currency. They want a constantly expanding currency that's going to get higher and higher and higher value. Well, if you're a farmer,
compared to what?
Well,
the U.S. dollar is not a stable currency,
right?
The idea of if you're a company, or if you're a farmer, if you're an individual and you're making a product, you want something stable so that what your supplies cost are going to be relative to what you're able to sell it for. But you don't want some con artist being able to manipulate the value,
like the government,
between the purchase of supplies and the time of sale.
Do you know what?
Well, that's absolutely true.
Well, I'm glad
it's
you mentioned
true that that people are going to want a more stable currency.
Mm-hmm.
They're not getting it with the dollar. And on Free Talk Live, you know, like, we have long supported the idea of money for the people. I don't think Bitcoin is that anymore. I think that personally, I don't think once Bitcoin went with the small block direction with Lightning and all that stuff, that many people who wanted money for the people, money that was not manipulated, that they went, you know, to other currencies for whatever reason.
Right.
Now, has that gone well as far as price? No.
And real quick,
and
Mark, I just want to mention Roger Ver's book that I mentioned earlier is called Hijacking Bitcoin, The Hidden History of BTC. So if people want to find out about the small block thing that you just mentioned, that is actually available on Amazon and some other places right now. Roger Ver himself penned this book. So anyway, go ahead, Mark.
Yep, that's just it, is that you know, Bitcoin isn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's a modern commodity. I think it's a newly made commodity. But the reason that Bitcoin is being successful is we're being robbed and have been being robbed by people who control the money for hundreds of years.
Government.
And the desire to stop that is the reason that Bitcoin's successful.
So well, that's I'm out here in San Francisco, a little north of Silicon Valley, and as legend goes, Bitcoin and some of the cryptocurrencies were developed because Wall Street was not investing in the inventors of Silicon Valley.
No, that's not quite true. It came about from the cypherpunks getting together after the collapse of 2008, when the banking industry decided to basically commit fraud against the real estate market. And like everybody like stole a bunch of money and was a bunch of thieves, but like nobody went to jail
don't disagree. Yeah,
right.
I don't disagree. But if I understand right, the crypto was existing before that. And it was
you are mistaken.
People who were they couldn't get even here in San Francisco. We had the West Coast Wall Street, you know, in the financial district, and some of them would invest in Silicon Valley, but they didn't have comparison. So they couldn't convince the old boys to invest in the new technology. And so the legend goes that they were at least investing among themselves to create the crypto to allow these inventions.
Noxious propaganda.
Yeah, to some extent, I get where you might have these ideas and say the words that you've said, because cryptography like has been around for a long time, right? The American government has been using cryptography just to, you know, keep codes and messages secret for a long time, and that kind of a thing. There has also been many attempts to make what we'll call digital money over the course of time, but it wasn't until after 2008, when the cypherpunks got together, that they solved the Byzantine general's problem. This was a thing that no other, we'll call it cryptographic or digital currency, anything else. They had many versions. Like, people would always propose things to the government and the Federal Reserve that were, you might think, were similar to Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, but weren't. Because none of them could ever solve the double spend problem, and that's the Byzantine general's problem, where if you have this digital currency, somebody could like take over and like double spend coins that you've already spent and get the value from it. None of them could solve that problem until the whole Wall Street collapse, right? All that happened. The 2008 stock market took a dump, and it was because of the real estate, and all the banks got bailed out at the taxpayer expense. Too big to fail, right? All of that happened. So it was the cypherpunks who got together, and of course Satoshi Nakamoto being one of the cypherpunks got together, and they were able to sew together multiple technologies to solve the Byzantine general's problem of double spending, and that's where the white paper for Bitcoin came from. And so of course it spawned a market now of literally thousands of cryptocurrencies that are on the market today.
And I'd like to point out that there was an attempt on both sides of the political aisle to solve that problem. There was a people's movement in Occupy Wall Street. Mm-hmm. There was a political movement in the Tea Party. And both of them failed miserably. Yeah. Now, what did solve the problem was creating something that completely bypassed what had caused the problem. Now, as far as a stable currency. Have you ever heard of the dollar index, the DXY, the Dixie?
Well, I've heard of it. I'm not super, okay.
It measures how the dollar compares to other currencies. And you can see clearly it is extremely volatile. And its volatility affects the entire market.
You're aware that after World War II, the U.S. dollar was considered the most stable currency, and so the IMF declared that the U.S. dollar would be the base currency.
Oh, they were an unbiased group, weren't they?
you know, all currencies would be based on the U.S. dollar. So even if you were in Paris and had francs and wanted to cross the channel to London, you had to base the francs against the U.S. dollar to exchange into pounds.
Yeah, if that you're, was, if
that,
you're
that was when they established the Ponzi. That's
if,
correct.
If you're an obedient slave listening to people who want to rule over you, then, yeah, you would follow those things. But if you're a free and independent individual, you would have stuck with tangible valuables such as silver, gold, that kind of thing back in that time.
And something you said a handful of times, the faith and credit.
Full faith and credit.
Now, I would like to direct your attention to faith is confidence. And that's what a confidence game is from, a con game. And credit is debt. So it is con games that make you poor. That's what the dollar is.
Well, that's why there's plenty of material written about post-American Revolution where they wanted an honest government in each of the 13 states so that there would be stability, that people trying to trade with Georgia from South Carolina or trying to go from New Jersey to Pennsylvania had a faith that the governments on both sides of those state lines were honest enough to be able to do transactions and that they wouldn't rip each other off just by going across the state line, that there wouldn't be an exchange rate between New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
Well, that's not what you just described. You didn't describe honest transactions. You described transactions that could not be faked. Like the reason that they had to have these particular local leaves printed onto the bills was not because one side or the other was honest. It was because they wanted a way that no one could fake it. And that's really how currency works. The reason that gold worked so well is because you could not pretend that this was gold. You couldn't pretend this was silver. And the reason that Bitcoin is such an amazing store of value and all of the cryptocurrencies that are effective means of transacting are based on is because you cannot fake them. Not because governments are honest.
Yeah, I recommend you find this book, The Origins of the American Revolution. I say, it was in a high school textbook back in the 40s and 50s and whatnot, and it probably even into the 60s. And it goes into a lot of description about having honest government. And if you're
familiar such thing.
With what happened in 1914, you know, when the Federal Reserve was created, that Congress that was corrupted that gave us the Federal Reserve also ripped us off by limiting Congress to 435 members. And before we had 60,000 people per congressman, but when they limited Congress to 435 members, all of a sudden the workload on congressmen has gone up to 800,000 per congressman.
Hey, David, I want to say thank you. Your history is spot on. I appreciate that aspect of your call. Feel free to call us again because we enjoy talking about all of these things. I just want to move on to another caller that we have. I believe this is Gigi calling from East Carolina.
Very funny. Charleston. Captain, I miss you like crazy. I have been dreadfully sick with a vicious COVID. Pardon me.
It's okay. Go ahead.
I'm still with laryngitis, so bear with me. It's so nice to be able to speak to you and Richie.
Richie's not here.
I miss
it's peakless.
Nikki terribly.
It's peakless
Richie's
tonight.
Not here.
It's peakless tonight, and then Mark Edge. Along with me.
Oh, Mark was on Gigi. The other night when I called and spoke to Mrs. Freeman.
Is that what you're calling her, Mrs. I'm going to call her that for a moment.
Oh,
hello,
mean
Mrs.
Lovingly,
Freeman. How are you today?
Not to be mean.
No, it's good.
I have something funny to share with everybody.
All right, go ahead.
I believe all of you will appreciate this. My husband was reading things on Facebook, and he came across a picture of Mar-a-Lago. And there was a caption that somebody wrote saying, former President Trump needs a reverse mortgage. Is that a riot? Hysterical, Jeffrey.
for our listeners of this show who don't know what a reverse mortgage is, this is a way where you could take like the equity that you have in the real estate that you own and sort of have it paid out over time to you in the same way that you have paid over time to your mortgage. It said now your house is paying you over time, but it's based on the equity and the current market value of your home. That's hilarious, Gigi.
Is that a riot? I can't take the credit for that. Jeffrey shared it with me, and I said, we must call Free Talk Live and tell everybody. I wrote it in a letter to Ian, and he was hysterical. He wrote back, this is the funniest news I've heard.
That's fantastic. I bet it was, too. Like, I'm sure people writing to Ian aren't sending him, you know, jokes. I mean, maybe they are. I don't know. But
oh,
like,
I write him about everything. The news, the movies that I watch, public affairs, international relations, what I'm cooking for Jeffrey's dinner, everything.
That's
he
fantastic.
He is my pen pal.
That's fantastic. I really do appreciate you. You're doing a better job than I am. I know.
No, he tells me that he's in touch with you all the time, but technically.
Yeah, we do. So, like, this is his brainchild, right? His spaghetti of madness, if you will.
Well,
all of these cables and
you learn a lot from him
all of the time. Like, I like to think that I'm a tech person, but no, he puts me to shame.
He's very bright and he writes beautiful letters. I mean, I was a professor for so many years and I value his vocabulary, his syntax, his range of interests intellectually. I take pride in saying that.
Yeah. Hey, Gigi, you are a fan of free speech, yes?
Oh, you better believe it. That's why I love this show.
I've been trying to mention this article basically all night, and so I'm going to take advantage of you right now.
If I may be of assistance.
Not in the way you hope, but in the verbal way.
Oh, you're a riot. Captain, use me.
This from Zero Hedge.
The whole country knows I have a secret crush on you.
It is a secret. Shh, don't tell anyone.
Not anymore.
It's thoroughly encrypted.
Apparently, the Wall Street Journal has reported that the U.S. Justice Department is considering whether to allow Julian Assange to plead guilty to a reduced charge of, quote, mishandling classified information, unquote.
And I sure as hell hope he does not.
Well, I hope he can survive no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm just a regular dude in Assange's position, right, this might sound appealing to me because it opens up the possibility of A, no extradition. B, just, you know, the government's going, okay, he said he was guilty. We'll sign the paperwork.
Not necessarily. If extradition is not specified in the legal agreement,
all right, you're an attorney.
It's still open for interpretation.
Yeah.
It must be specified in the legal agreement that his attorney and he both sign.
Justice Department officials and Assange's lawyers have had preliminary discussions in recent months about what a plea deal could look like. According to people familiar with the matter, a potential softening in a standoff filed with political and legal complexities, according to the details in the Wall Street Journal report. The talks come as Assange has spent some 5 years behind bars, and U.S. prosecutors face diminishing odds that he would serve much more time, even if he were convicted stateside. So that's the long and the short.
So, Gigi,
well,
you're...
my husband raised something very interesting last night when we were talking. Jeffrey said, how come Republicans want to go after Hunter Biden on lots of accusations that he did work for this government and that government while his father was vice president and he made lots and lots of money?
Yeah.
How come the Democrats are not saying, hey, let's go after Jared Kushner because his father-in-law was president, and Jared made lots and lots of money for the Saudis.
Mm. Oh, because that's where their bread is buttered. No. This is a very good question.
Yeah. No.
The reason that they're not going after the Saudis is because they have an agreement to sell their oil only for dollars, and that is why dollars are worth anything. The second the Saudi Arabian government decides that they will sell their oil for anything other than dollars, the dollar plummets in international value.
Dollar.
Hmm?
They want the dollar.
The Saudis?
Yes.
No, they want military support, which is why the U.S. government is currently engaged in a genocide against the Houthis.
Weapons and technology with the dollars. I beg to differ with you, sir.
No, they've specifically said that they're considering other currencies.
We've got short on time. Mark, your opinions, thoughts?
I'm just excited that Gigi's still very interested in what her husband raises at night.
Oh, always. My husband has a great sense of humor and is very open to political interpretation.
Gigi, thank you so much for the call.
The other night when I called.
We appreciate you. Feel free to call us again, Gigi. If we didn't get to your call, we apologize. Please call us back on another night. We'll be here tomorrow from 7 to 10 p.m. If you missed any part of the show, feel free to find the archives over at freetalklive.com. And find the resources tab. Thanks and peace.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.